Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz. Friday edition of the show here. Drantzer, of course, covers the team for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Big Friday show coming up. Looking forward to Dmitry Filipovich joining us at 1:30, as he usually does, to wrap up the week. And we got a lot of open space before that. So send your texts in, again, to the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Canucks are practicing right now. They've got a pair of games coming up over the weekend. What's going on, Drantz?
Not much, buddy. I'm excited for the weekend. Hey, this is an interesting slate of games tonight.
It is.
Yeah. Calgary Flames play the Colorado Avalanche, the Utah Hockey Club. Did you hear Bruff this morning?
I did hear that. That was pretty good, I thought.
Yeah.
So for people who didn't hear the morning show, Bruff's like ask us anything question to the listeners was, would you rather the Canucks' hated divisional rival, the Calgary Flames, make the playoffs over the Canucks, or the team that Drantz has been championing, the Utah Hockey Club, make the playoffs over the Vancouver Canucks? And then you have to deal with all of the self-backpatting and I told you so's and the victory laps from Drantz. And from what I understand, it was a pretty split response from the audience.
I love having the status of an Alberta hockey team. Okay. Really quickly to clarify my Utah take, though. I just want to have solid ground to stand on.
Okay.
The consistent take, I have had two consistent takes about the Utah Hockey Club. One is, because of their profile as a young team that legitimately controls play five-on-five, can attack off the rush, has just gotten healthy on the back end, and has elite players that could suddenly level up, They are the team that's the real threat, not the Calgary Flames. That's been take number one.
Okay.
Take number two has been, while young and immature, I think they are materially better than the Canucks, at least in terms of what their fastball is.
All right.
Those are my two takes.
Okay, those are your two takes.
I want to be like, I haven't called Utah to finish ahead of Vancouver. Mm-hmm. I've said, you know, Vancouver's got the veteran savvy. If Hughes can carry this team, like, I've consistently said Vancouver should be favored to make the playoffs. But if there is a threat, it's Utah.
Because the one thing I'll say is, it's not as if picking any of these teams to me qualifies as a hot take. You know what I mean?
Like, I think if you're picking St. Louis,
St. Louis maybe
that
after
is
last,
a hot take.
Maybe after last night.
After last night,
yeah, because the results really matter.
But
day-to-day results matter a lot.
That was always going to happen to them, man. They are not serious.
But my point
I'm just
is,
excited for you to stop pretending that Utah and St. Louis are the same.
I don't truly could not care less about the Blues.
I know how much you love the Blues.
Big Blues booster.
What
over
would
here.
You guys rather have? Calgary make the playoffs or Jamie Dodd be right about the
my
Blues?
My notorious St. Louis boosting. But my point is, it's like the standings are so closely bunched. Yeah, you pick a team, they got a semi-decent chance of making it anyways. So, okay. I'm not even pointing this out to you specifically. I'm just saying in general. I don't think anyone, if you pick Calgary, Utah, or the Canucks to make the playoffs, you get to be like, oh, I saw it coming. It's like, yeah, they were within 2 points of the playoffs with 18 games left.
Well, now.
It's not a crazy prediction.
You don't get credit now.
Yeah.
You had to be on it in mid-November.
Sure, that's fair.
Don't deny me my credit. You're right. No one else gets credit.
That's
agreed.
Right. Only Drantz.
Maybe.
Of course. Anyways, you can send those texts at 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dmitry joins us at 1:30, but right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 14th. And the headline is, of course, the Canucks back to practice today with a massive back-to-back set of home games looming on the weekend. First, Connor Bedard and the Chicago Blackhawks tomorrow night on Hockey Night in Canada. And then on Sunday, Drantz's Utah Hockey Club, 5 p.m. start on Sunday. Utah playing the Kraken today, so they'll have a day off in between. The Canucks are playing on that day, and that is a big time game if the Canucks are going to hope to hold off Utah and secure a spot in the Western Conference playoffs. So we talked a little bit about the goaltending decision that the Canucks have to make here. And, you know, we'll get an update on Thatcher Demko a little bit later on the whiteboard when we talk about the lineup notes. But just in general, whoever's in net, they need, you mentioned Quinn Hughes, and we talked about Elias Pettersson and his performance, especially late in the third period against the Calgary Flames. Even if you get great goaltending, what you need more than anything is for those two guys to continue to be the best players on the ice. And certainly against Chicago, they should be. But even Quinn Hughes at 60% should be in the Utah game as well, or 70%, whatever you want to call it. And Elias Pettersson has that upside as well. He hasn't been better than guys like Clayton Keller and Logan Cooley this year, but he certainly can be. And they need that version of Elias Pettersson. They need Quinn Hughes to be in the lineup.
How are you not
going to
name check the best player on the Utah Hockey Club? Come on. Bud. Get together. Anyway, look, you're right. That's really the logic, right? The logic we saw from that Calgary game was the Canucks had Pettersson and Hughes, and they had that version of Pettersson, and Calgary didn't, and so the Canucks won, right? Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau still broke the game open in their own way. It was just at crucial moments, Kadri got stopped, mm-hmm. Pettersson made the difference. You know, like, at crucial moments, Hughes was stirring the drink and Huberdeau wasn't, right? And that's the difference. That should be the difference between the Canucks and these other Stryver-class teams. But injuries to Hughes have sort of cast some doubt on that, and Pettersson's mystifying form, which hopefully he's beginning to come out of, would sort of be the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, you know, hopefully what we're seeing is something more like linear progress from Pettersson. Hopefully this is like him beginning to break through. Still might be a process. Kind of was. Do you remember when Boudreaux took over and it was like still a month and a half before he really got cooking? You know, when you're coming from the low point that he was at with really that road trip post Four Nations faceoff representing the worst five-game stretch I've ever seen him play. You know, do you hit 100 miles per hour from a standing start, given just, and it wasn't even a standing start. He was walking backwards.
Yes.
Right? Probably not, right? So maybe it does take some time. Maybe we are seeing that. I'm open-minded to it. I'm certainly hoping that he can come out of this.
I think the key thing is, if you're just looking for these next 17 games, is he doesn't need to be, you know, I was making the point on the show yesterday. Yeah, it was a good game against Calgary, but it wasn't peak Pettersson. He doesn't need to go from 0 to 100, right? Like, even getting significantly better than he has been this season, but not quite at his very best. And again, I'm just talking about for these next 17 games. For beyond that, for the rest of the contract and at that ticket, yeah, you want peak Pettersson for as much of it as possible, of course. But he doesn't need to instantly overnight turn into 100-point dominant two-way center again for this team to have a chance to make the playoffs. The closer he gets, the better, obviously. But there is still value in the progress, right? And him being, yeah, I'm thinking I'm making progress instead of, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back. It doesn't need to be fully back instantly for it to still have a very positive impact on what the Canucks are doing, right? Because it's just been such a black hole at the top of their lineup. So even if he's like a low-end first-line center.
Oh, yeah, huge.
That's huge.
Huge.
They didn't have anything close to that in the lineup until recently with
absolutely
him.
Massive, no doubt about it. That said, you know, this back-to-back games is a challenge, right? This Chicago team lost to the Sharks last night, so mm-hmm. that's not exactly inspiring confidence if you're the Calgary Flames or the Utah Hockey Club set on scoreboard watching tomorrow. But... you know, we do know that this Blackhawks team has a lot of good defensive personnel. They've got some guys like Nazar and Mikheyev that can burn you off the rush. Canucks have been burned off the rush repeatedly the last couple games. I mean, all season, but the last couple games, it's felt like it's accelerated a little bit. They haven't been especially good defending the rush, which is something they're usually better at. And obviously, they've got Bedard, who can hurt you. Right. And you know that they're going to be motivated to have him and his teammates will be motivated to have his back mm-hmm. by performing as well as possible in the rink that Bedard grew up attending NHL games and rooting for the home team. You know what I mean? You want to show well in your hometown. And Bedard hasn't yet, right? Like, Bedard's Vancouver games haven't been his best.
Yeah, well, you remember the one from earlier in the season. The image was with him head down on the bench at the end, yeah. Right? Like, that was, he was, it obviously meant a lot to him, and it was obviously a huge disappointment that he wasn't able to have a better showing in that one.
And
I think that's his only game here, by the way.
Yeah, it is, because he got hurt before the other one. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, this is going to be a pretty motivated, this is not your average game against a cellar dweller in mid-March. Right? This is going to be a dialed Blackhawks team, and Spencer Knight is capable of stealing any given game. So, trap opponent on Saturday, and then a Utah Hockey Club team that already has a massive speed edge.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Canucks don't have legs in that game, and they found them late against Calgary, right? So it's not a fait accompli that they won't. But if they don't have legs in that game, they're in trouble, especially with how that Utah team uses its speed to both attack off the rush, but also defend with, you know, a certain level of oppressiveness, leveraging their speed to take away space and time. So that's a team that's dangerous. You have to be on your game. Canucks haven't beaten them yet this year, two previous meetings.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, depending on what happens with that Kraken game tonight, what happens with that Canucks game against Chicago, like, you know, if you're subscribing to my theory that team's the real threat, not the Calgary game, you know, That Sunday game might be what the Wednesday game has been billed as, right? Like, the Wednesday win was billed as X, and it was. I'm not taking away from it. But if you are buying what I'm selling, no one ever is. But if you're buying what I'm selling,
so much inventory to try to move.
I'm swimming in inventory. Where's the market? There's no demand for this. No, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Wednesday might have been the false dawn. Wednesday was the, you know, the thing that, you know, the people who haven't attended Hockey 101 classes thought mattered. But Sunday's the real one, or the real show. I'm going to the game as a fan, actually.
On Sunday?
Yeah.
Oh, for Utah. That's perfect.
No,
you waited until Utah made their visit, and you're like, all right, I'm a fan tonight.
I'm going as a neutral fan, of course. I'm actually curious. How should I handle this? I'm taking my nephew. It's a Christmas present for my nephew.
Delightful.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I haven't been to Rogers Arena as a fan in a decade plus, to be totally honest with you. So I'm going to the game as a fan, and how do I, like, handle rooting? If they score, you know, you want to, like, celebrate with your nephew.
Yeah.
I can't celebrate a goal.
Yeah, you can.
No.
You can celebrate a goal. You're not on press row. You're there as a neutral fan can celebrate any good play they want to.
Do I celebrate every goal?
You can if you want. I would just celebrate cool plays either way.
Okay.
That's what a neutral fan does.
So you go as a neutral fan and scrupulously.
And you're just like, oh, that was awesome.
I just don't want to. I don't want my nephew to be jumping up and down because the Canucks scored a goal, and me be like, no, I don't root.
Don't do that. You don't have to do that.
Okay, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
To be clear, I just figured I'd, like, stand and be like,
yeah,
politely.
You stand and clap
and give him a high five and stuff.
Yeah,
because really, it's about him. I don't care.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excited to obviously to see. The
you
game,
don't have to, like, teach him about, like, sports writing ethics while you're there at the game.
I'm not planning on it. Just planning on buying him an oversized hot dog and a jersey or
That's
whatever.
What it's all about right there.
Utah Hockey Club jersey, to be clear.
Austin and Langley texts in, Dranser's nephew, wow, I'm having fun. Dranser, they're getting caved in PDO-wise below expected goals. You idiot. You think this is fun?
This isn't fun. This is miserable. What about the long-term direction?
This is a mediocre process. Anyways, we'll talk more about the games over the weekend later on in the show. In the broadsheet, how about this? Speaking of Bruff on the morning show, Bruff dropping a little bit of... Now, he phrases it that here's what he thinks happened in the past in the JT Miller, Elias Pettersson drama that engulfed the team for much of the season. But I thought it was an interesting way he put it. He said, you know, you hear sometimes how coaches have lost the room. And Bruff says he thinks JT Miller lost the room on his way out. And also there might have been some sort of run-in, blow-up with the coaching staff that kind of sealed his fate. And this is in the context of Elliot Friedman kind of further elaborating on something we talked about yesterday on the 32 Thoughts podcast, saying during the kind of heights of that friction, of that beef, the rift, in Friedman's words, Hughes really backed Pettersson during all of that, felt strongly that Pettersson could still have a big impact for them. He believed in the long run, everyone would be better off for it, including Miller. And I think that part's key because there was the whole, like, oh, Team Petey versus Team Miller thing. I don't think that's Friedman saying Hughes was Team Petey necessarily, just that he still believed very much in the player and what he could do, and also saw the writing on the wall, as I think everyone, from what I can tell, in the organization did, on JT Miller, and that it was time to move on. So an interesting couple of tidbits there, and of course, this comes after, you know, Quinn Hughes gives the very public vote of confidence to Elias Pettersson after the Calgary game, but wanted to pass that along from Bruff, him saying that he thinks JT lost the room towards the end of his tenure here, and then again, Elliot Friedman emphasizing how much Hughes has had Pettersson's back through this process.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, I'm sure we'll get a full accounting of exactly how it went down.
That I hope matches, so. That would be nice.
It matches some of what I've heard whispered, but a lot of what I heard whispered too was like, it's not that nothing happened with the coaching staff, but it's like nothing happened that anyone would consider notable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like there's lots of
stern, stressful conversations.
That's what I was
going to
say. There's lots of like heightened interactions between players and coaching staffs in the NHL.
And also one thing that has been suggested to me is that at least to some extent, a lot of the worst stuff between the players years ago, and that really this year wasn't as bad as it had been, at sort of low ebbs of the interpersonal relationship. Like, I think there's at least an element to which Pettersson's like, oh, what are we talking about? Mm. And Miller's, I'll bring him out right now and we'll talk about it. Reactions weren't like abject lies necessarily. So, look, it's a complicated one.
Yes.
I'm not going to add to it unless I'm absolutely certain that what I'm saying is true. Those are things that I've sort of heard over the course of this process. Obviously, the organization determined that they couldn't move forward with both. No surprise. Pettersson and Hughes, Hughes knows puck.
Yep.
He knows what Pettersson can do. Like,
how many people have a closer relationship with him? I don't even mean in terms of being best friends, but just purely on a professional level, right? Like they've spent a ton of time together on the ice together, working out, practice, all of those. They've been here with this organization for a long time. So there's going to, like, if anyone should have a degree of clarity about Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes is a good bet to have that. He's been here. He knows him way more longer than Tockett, way longer than Alvin, longer than Rutherford. Like he's the guy, him and Besser really, who know him the best on this team.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Pettersson can do some things that very few other people can do. You know what I mean? I'm sure Hughes respects and values that enormously because he knows how hard it is to do some of that stuff.
Yep.
Right. So, we'll see where this one ultimately ends up. But obviously Hughes has Pettersson's back, and that's good to hear.
Absolutely. Lineup notes, the team practicing at UBC today. They got on the ice at 11:30. Not sure if they're still going at it there or not, but lots of news to come out of this practice. So DPD Elias Pettersson, he was there. Taking a regular line rush on defense. Tyler Myers was there after missing the Calgary game and also a regular participant. Thatcher Demko was present at practice as one of three goalies. Now, Demko left early. That was a planned part of the process as he starts to ramp up over the next few days. So a practice for Demko, but an abbreviated one would certainly suggest, as we expect, that he's not going to be an option over the weekend for the Canucks. So DPD, after leaving the Calgary game, after that hit from Connor Zary, or the elbow, I should say, really, he was there. Tyler Myers there, Demko there. Hronek and Garland absent, but the team says just maintenance days for both of them. So hopefully no real cause for concern with either Hronek or Garland. As a result of all that, the line combinations today, Elias Pettersson with Nils Höglander, who sticks there, Jake DeBrusque on the other wing there, Filip Hedl skating between Drew O'Connor and Brock Besser, Suter with Joshua and Lekkerimäki, and I wonder if Lekkerimäki is just more of a stand-in there for Connor Garland, and then Teddy Bluger with Neil Zaman and Kiefer Sherwood on the fourth line, Hughes and Myers, DPD and Marcus Pettersson, and then Forbort and Mancini are your defensive pairs. One other thing we should mention as well, Linus Karlsson signs a one-year, one-way deal worth $775,000 with the Canucks organization next year. Karlsson was on track to be a Group 6 UFA this summer, but he stays with the organization for next year as well.
Yeah, it's consistent with the Canucks MO. They go out after the deadline and regularly start signing some of their organizational depth, really getting a sense of what they're looking at. It also makes sense to get some of this business done before the college free agent season really kicks into high gear. You know, league minimum contract, he'll require waivers to be sent down, organizational depth. The guy Tocchet obviously trusts. He's strong on his stick. He's not very fast. Yeah, I mean, that's the real issue, right? Is just the speed has limited his NHL upside critically, I think it's fair to say,
over the course of his time here. His scoring in Abbotsford over the last couple of years is excellent.
Well, sure, but he's also getting up there.
100%. You know, so it's like, not like he's young for the league. He's 25, right? He'll turn 26 early next season.
And we look at, like, Lekaramäki's scoring in the American League at 20 one way.
Very different.
And we look at Linus Karlsson's a different way.
But
right?
It's also that it's that type of thing where this is like the classic quad A thing, right? You can do really, really well at the American League level, but you might have one trait that prevents you from not translating that level of production to the NHL, but even just like kind of sticking as a regular in the NHL.
Yeah. And in Karlsson's case, it's easy, right? It's the speed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot that he does really, really well aside from that. So, yeah, I mean, we'll sort of see where this one goes, but I wouldn't be shocked if this wasn't the last one we see. I mean, even a guy like, you know, I kind of wonder, given the surgery that shut him down, but like a Noah Juulsen, right? If Juulsen's open to reprising the role that he had this year, where you're kind of like a seven, you know, if you end up down in Abbotsford and clear waivers to get there, you probably wear the C. You're a local guy from the Valley, reliable warrior, play hurt, know the Canucks system, have been around, right? I mean, that's like perfect organizational depth. Like, is that the sort of deal that the Canucks would consider, right? So this is something we've seen them do repeatedly, year after year. You know, like, remember that year they did like Guillaume Brisebois, Christian Melanin. They sort of take care of some of this easy business, especially at these league minimum salary levels, and then sort of go from there.
I also wonder, looking at the other guys down in Abbotsford, the other forwards, Max Sasson, Atu Ratu, Arshdeep Bains, all RFAs after this year, all in need of new deals. And you throw Linus Karlsson into that mix, who is going to be a UFA, he gets his deal. But that kind of group of players, I'll throw Niels Amon in there as well, although I think he has another year left on his deal. He does. But there's that group of young players that I'm sure the organization was really hoping at least one of them would force their way to being an NHL regular. I'm not saying like pop and be a middle six scorer or anything like that, but just pop to the level of there's no point in sending me back down to Abbotsford. I'm clearly one of your 13 best forwards. And we've seen all of those players come up and play NHL games at different points of the year, and none of them have really been able to make that impact, make their case to the coaching staff that, hey, guess what? I'm an NHL player now. Don't send me back down to Abbotsford. So, you know, we'll see. Linus Karlsson gets a contract. He'll get another shot to try to do that next year, see if he can improve his skating a little bit to do that. And then I think guys like Ratu, Sasson, Baines, it'll be another year of, okay, can anyone make that jump from organizational depth call up to regular NHL player? Because none of them have done it so far yet.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for co-signing that. Those are the lineup notes for today. Playoff standings update. So the Blues, as you mentioned, they lose to Pittsburgh last night in regulation. Tough one for a team that was trying to hang around in the playoff race. And at least in the eyes of Dom's model, gives the Canucks playoff chances a pretty significant boost, up to 54% from 48% yesterday. And of course, as we all know pretty much at this point, I think, 71 points in 64 games for the Flames. They play Colorado tonight. 71 and 65 for the Canucks. They're idle tonight. 69 and 65 for Utah. They play the Kraken. So there is a world where now Utah's already played 65, so they'd be at 71 and 66. But all three teams could be at 71 points after tonight, depending on the results against between Calgary and the Utah games.
Yeah, and in terms of the gambling odds, the Avalanche are pretty heavy favorites at home, on the road against the Calgary Flames.
Should mention Michael Backlund is week to week.
Yeah,
for the
week
Flames
to week
as well. That's a tough loss.
That's a huge loss for them. So, yeah, I mean, he's still somehow one of the best defensive centers in hockey. It's really quite incredible. Anyway, the Colorado Avalanche opened minus 184 favorites. They've actually been steamed up to about minus 200. Calgary Flames plus 175 or 180, depending on where you're finding it listed. The Utah Hockey Club favored on the road, however, against the Seattle Kraken, minus 130. Kraken, well, that's where it opened anyway. You can really find them as high as minus 155 or minus 165. Kraken are anywhere between plus 125 and plus 130. Dogs at home in terms of the to make the playoff odds. Can I just exclude St. Louis at this point?
Go for it.
The Vancouver Canucks are minus one.
Fill your boots.
The Canucks are minus 150 to miss, plus 120 to make. So they are remain heavy favorites among this Western Conference Striver tier group of teams. The Kraken is not listed. Or sorry, no, I'm not looking for them. The Utah Hockey Club, plus 350, really benefiting from the Blues loss. And yep, the Calgary Flames, plus 190, also benefiting from the Blues loss. They were at plus 260 yesterday.
There you go. That is the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your texts in, and we will dive into some of them on the other side. Again, Dmitry Filipovich joins us at 1:30 here on Friday edition of Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.